as a person, he's the perfect racing driver. You can put him in a car, and the only thing he's going to focus on that moment is that race. Nothing will face.
Basically, we love you, Charles. That's what we're all trying
to say. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Verge Alternative F1 Podcast. I'm joined with my normal band of merry men, Matt and Sam. How are you guys?
We're back. I'm good.
I feel like a merry man today. I'm in green and in the forest, so I feel that's a very apt description. I like it.
Good colour blend. I mean, I can't say the things I've said off. But just going to say, Germany, yeah.
So for those who can't, obviously for our podcast listeners, I am wearing the brand new Germany top, which I am sporting, rocking, looking very nice.
But his excuse, ladies and gents, is they make great shirts. it's black and white.
And they make great paint. They make great paint historically.
Right.
Not even German. Just if you're wondering, if you don't even know what Andre looks like, he definitely doesn't look German. Just saying.
I do. I look exactly like Boateng or someone like that. Defensive back. Something like that. Anyway, moving on. We've got, for those who are watching our visuals on YouTube or virgemagazine.co.uk, you're seeing our brand new, our livery, effectively. So we've got
fresh new graphics.
If you're wondering, we are literally acting like we can see it on this pre-recorded call. Like, yes, look at it, but we're not going to edit it in afterwards.
Here's one I made earlier.
It looks amazing. Borders. I must say, we're really excited. Obviously, the show's developing, and we're getting a nice, loyal following. So we do thank you guys for watching and also listening. Really appreciate you guys. So we have some. Just want to make sure that our new listeners are following us on all the platforms. So on Instagram, we have Alternative Sport. At Alternative Sport, and then also at Alternative F1. We have two. We're quite greedy with our Instagram handles. And then obviously you can follow us on Verge at Verge Mag as well. And obviously at Verge Mag online on Twitter. So now I've got all that stuff out of the way. We can get on.
Coronavirus still holding up races. Here we go.
Oh my God. So guys, just quickly, obviously, not being too much developments in regards to obviously people to be able to get their liberties back and freedom.
No.
But
I like you. I like liberty. I like the way you did that.
Exactly. See, I'm trying. I like I'm trying. I like so, I mean, how are you guys getting on?
Yeah, man, I'm good. I'm good. I've not much really to report. I'm totally honest.
Same as last week.
There was some cooking and baking going on, I believe.
I travelled a little. I went to the garden. I went for a walk on Saturday, and I went further than 2 miles outside of my house. So that was quite nice. I saw a different shade of green. That's about it, really, mate. filled up my fridge.
Matt was doing some type of cooking from what I remember last week.
I was making homemade sausage rolls, and now me and my girlfriend have decided to go on a health kick, and now we're trying to eat healthy because sitting around in this lockdown, you just figure out that you can't bake almost every day, and here we are. So healthy living, trying to exercise, hoping for races, and it's quite weird because now we're without sport. We, for once in our lives, we're the prime athletes now. So, we're the superstars of the world.
Exactly. And obviously, we just have to obviously say the caveat. Obviously, there's more important things in this world, obviously going on. But we are here to be able to give you some light entertainment, a little bit of, thinking away from going into the shops and running after children.
For those. Just a caveat for all listeners.
Oh, God.
I am in no way an athlete. Or in my prime, so please don't ever challenge me to do anything. Matt may be a prime athlete, but Jesus, I'm not.
Well, we're going to see this season.
I just about did my 5 kilometer run. Struggles.
Are you still doing your running?
Trying.
Yeah, he's still on the same 5K.
I did another 5K today. Feeling fresh, feeling good. Missing racing is about as good as you can get.
So I'm going to distract away from I've literally done any exercise whatsoever to our first potential start, potential, I must say, in Austria.
Fingers crossed.
So what you? So are we crossing our? We are crossing our fingers.
We're crossing everything at the moment.
Crossing everything. So what are they saying? What are they saying? May or June? I haven't seen that.
So the first race is the 5th of so the Australian will be the Australian. That's way before the Austrian Grand Prix, okay. Which will be on the 5th of July. So what they say at the moment is it's potentially a double header event. It's not going to be like the next race we're talking about, but there's talk of a Wednesday evening race, which kind of excites me. For us, it breaks
the week. Wednesday evening.
So what has been said at the moment is, so the Austrian government have said, we're not going to stand in the way of your race. Like, provided that the race is done behind closed doors, no fans, we're not going to stand in the way. As long as you basically do as much as you can to make sure the teams, the staff, the racers, the drivers are all safe and contained and whatever, then we're not going to get anywhere. But Red Bull, who obviously own the Red Bull Ring, which is where the Austrian Grand Prix is held, have basically said that they're drawing up measures on how they can do that. And one of the options that they've got is a race weekend on a Sunday. So do a qualifying run on Saturday, do a race on Sunday, and then the next race will be on the following Wednesday evening. Now, they haven't said whether there's going to be a second qualifying session. I'm not sure how that works. I would like to assume there would be, because what we can't do is race with the same grid on a Sunday, because there's not going to be much of a change, really, unless there's rain, which... let's hope, because there was rain this time around in Germany. We all are seeing Lewis crash out the race. But I think Wednesday afternoon race would be good. I mean, it follows news as well that came out about Silverstone.
Yeah.
But Silverstone has said they're basically up to do a double header weekend. So that's Saturday and a Sunday race. I'm going to assume, I do not know at the time of recording, whether that would be like a Thursday practice session, Friday qualifying session, and Saturday race. And then a Sunday morning qualifying session, a Sunday afternoon race. They have done a qualifying and a race the same day before, so I don't see it being a problem. But Liberty Media are obviously trying to push for 15 to 18 race calendar. So at this point, anyone who's a racing fan should just be like, yeah, just give me a race. I don't care the format.
Go for it.
I'm gonna say you know I think that we as the lovers of F1 and people that are hungry for it. Look, I think it's a pretty good compromise. I'll take a double header, and I think what's been really good about having this moment of pause for all sports, for all humans, is like you can take a moment to sit back and actually reassess things. And I think that's actually quite a nice little refresh. You think like, well, why not? Why not hit up this you know, midweek race? It'd be something that's completely, you know, completely new and unusual. And we think, well, why not? Why not?
I was going to say that now is the time for F1 to really experiment and try different things. I think that people now are going to be so, you know, as we are, so grateful that there's actually races that we're happy to be able to have, you know, two races in one day, you know, maybe three, whatever it is, like we'll put up with it.
To be fair, go on, Matt.
No, I was going to say, my question is, as media and as, you know, people like us that get to go down and cover races with partner sponsors and whatnot, it's like, are media allowed? Or is it going to be like strictly just the teams? And
I mean, there's no.
Are you asking for yourself?
I wear a face mask. If exactly. It's all good.
There's a little bit of selfish.
He's asking for entry.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I'm thinking the same thing. Go.
I was going to say, I'd be surprised if there wasn't a select crew of media, because let's be honest.
Not us yet.
Not us.
We'll see. We'll be there.
We'll see. Maybe.
I'll take Silverstone 2. Silverstone.
Maybe there in his German shirt at Silverstone.
Yeah, I'll be there. Or my Austrian one for Toto. Speaking of Hugh, segue into that. Yeah. Toto Wolf has actually bought shares in Aston Martin.
Caesar planted, surely.
Is anybody else here not really seeing this as a surprise, or is it just me?
I'm surprised.
I mean, didn't he put out some type of like denial that he's ever going to leave Mercedes F1? So
yeah, but it doesn't mean he doesn't stop and put his own personal back change in there. Which is exactly what I mean. If you class 37 million as pocket change, then please feel free to do whatever you will with it, which is probably what you've done.
Honestly, he's a smart guy. I mean, he's definitely my favourite team principal by far. You know, I do respect the guy. I don't want him to move over. But then maybe that actually might be good for the sport, actually, if he was, in theory, to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Aston Martin get on with him. I mean, if he can take one team like Mercedes and really boost it up to top of the rankings. I mean, he did have Michael Schumacher as one of the first drivers, so that is a massive PR boost. And they do have basically an empty pot of money behind them. So, pot of money behind them. So, you never know if Aston Martin have got that, maybe, but I don't think they'll have. But we know that he's very good friends with Lawrence Stroll. So, I'm not surprised. If someone like Lawrence Stroll is investing in Aston Martin, there is going to be a full plan about like turning that company around, because they've been struggling for a while, right? Like yeah. The road going division, they've been struggling for a while. Like 4 or 5 years ago, we'd see Aston Martin, maybe a bit longer than that, we'd see Aston Martin in endurance racing and doing well. We don't really see that much anymore. So yeah, I think there's going to be a big plan coming in with Lawrence. So it's only smart of Toto to put some dollar in.
But isn't this so fascinating for people that don't actually follow Formula One? Like, you could imagine if this happened in any other sport, you'd be like,
yeah,
how is this possible? Because he is so, you know, such an important part of Mercedes at this stage and is hugely recognizable face. Like, for people that watch the races and might not know, you know, the team behind the scenes, well, you will see this man's face around a lot. And to see Toto Wolff, you know, invest, I mean, you have it in football where you have some owners that might own stake in another club in maybe a foreign country or a lower league.
Yeah, but not in the same.
You're on the same playing. You're on the same playing field.
It's I feel like this is I don't know, Arsenal's manager personally investing in the building of Manchester United Stadium. Do you know what I mean? That's what it feels like to me. I don't watch football, but they're building a team. And
I mean, let's make it clear. I think with Mercedes, the way that they're running, they're a well-oiled machine. You know, so I don't see them being fearful of anything that's going on at Aston Martin at all, full stop. And obviously the amount of team principals that actually line up to be able to be in that position, to have that team, that car, that whole network of people that they've got, they've literally like moved the sport to a different level. So I don't think they'll be worried in that sense, but you know,
Drive to Survive, watch out.
Yeah, it's been quite interesting because Toto he's very camera friendly, very charismatic, he has his own following. I would say he's as popular as the drivers, if not more than at least Bottas. Like, it's definitely, you know.
I mean, you know, if you're going, again, on a football comparison, like, you can easily put him in the same bracket as like Jose Mourinho or Pep Guardiola. Like, he's a top level guy, and you know what he does for his team and what he is as a mind of F1. It's huge for the sport. So, yeah, it's quite a fascinating watch to see that develop.
And I mean, there's also, it is only 5% of the road company. It's not the team. I mean, the team will be rebranded, or Racing Point will be rebranded as Aston Martin, but so far it's just the road car company. So, you know, it's still a little controversial.
I'm sure we're not going to be the only people. Not the only people going to be asking questions about that. And I think
he's fully like planting the seed.
Yeah, he's going to get a fair amount of questions about that from the press, that's for sure. So let's move on to, another high profile person in the sport, Seb. There's some news about his contract.
Yeah. So apparently there is talks that he is going to extend for another year. Which
ruining my whole theory. This is,
mate, it's ruining my dream of seeing Lewis race in red. Do you know what I mean? But don't you?
It seems positive. It seems positive, doesn't it? In a sense, it's not like we're a Ferrari. Like, kind of had like Kimi Raikkonen like stick around. It was still a bit like over it. It's like, at least Seb remains competitive, and I feel like at least he's, you know, what is a shame is how disappointing Seb's season was last year. Mm-hmm. That I'm excited to see what he was going to do this year, because you kind of feel like he would have been out to prove himself, and if he didn't, but do you feel like he's kind of doing it to keep his seat safe? But I don't know. Is it right for him to assume that? Yeah, for Seb, yeah.
I mean, it would normally be at this point, well, coming into like 2 or 3 months' time, we'd start city season for next year as well. So,
yeah, it's probably, started already, to be honest with you.
Yeah, to be fair, there's always these kind of rumors floating around.
Just to be clear, I mean, some of the rumors, for people who don't know, some of the rumors was that, they were looking at replacing him at the end of the season, Ferrari looking at replacing Seb Vettel at the end of the season. If he doesn't perform or keep up or beat Leclerc, he was looking at Carlos Sainz. I do that on purpose. Nice. Because he told me off the last time, and I do that for the rest of my life. I think from my point of view, I think it's a wise move for Ferrari to do that, because obviously, as any human being, you're going to be like behind the scenes, like, look, guys, I'm hearing this a bit too much. It's coming from somewhere. Should I start looking around talking to other teams or not?
At this point in, when was it, 2018, we were expecting Daniel Ricciardo to stay at Red Bull. So, those rumours aren't always true. So, we were saying, there's money on the table for Danny Ric at Red Bull. Apparently his salary is going to be the same as Verstappen's, and then bang, it goes to Renault and a dollar bills deal, isn't it? So,
that's another one to keep an eye on as well, because Ricciardo, everyone knows me and I love my little gossip and rumors. But one of the things that was mentioned to Ricciardo, I think he was quoted to say, look, you never know what's going to happen. You could end up back at Red Bull. You never know. So I think
stranger things have happened.
Yeah, that would be one hell of a turnaround. Poor Alex must have choked on his cereal when he read that one. I'll tell you. Speaking of the young drivers now, young drivers that we have been pretty much running the off season and keeping the interest going and flying the flag for all Formula One. We are lucky actually to be able to be in this new kind of stage where you've got obviously Leclerc who we'll talk about the E-Grand Prix later on, but you've got Leclerc, you've got I'd even class Verstappen
this is really controversial, Sam. You're about to get ganged on by me and Andre.
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure if that's a good thing or bad.
A young driver.
It's going to be bad.
However, obviously we've got Lando Norris and you've got George Russell, and obviously Alex Albon as well. This is one of our favourites as well. So, guys, what do you think? Just overall about what do you think about the overall new band of drivers? What are they adding to Formula One?
I'm a big fan of it. I think arguably you could say F1 has been kind of lost in the kind of upper older demographic of fanship and history is. And since we've had a bit of a transition now, and Formula One is now starting to be social media and embracive, drivers are allowed to post on social media, and it's a real change. And I think we are now starting to see some really interesting personalities. We're starting to see a bit of diversity, and we've got people from around Europe that are really, that have a fan base and have a following and actually bring something fresh into Formula One. And I feel like out of these wild times and the coronavirus madness we're living in, that Formula One has probably really, really benefited on, at least on the driver level, that we are getting an opportunity to know and understand these drivers on a larger level, either one because of their social media presence, but also for e-gaming. And a lot of these dudes are just young dudes that love playing on games, consoles and whatnot. And now you're seeing them interact and bonding. If you watch the Twitch streams, and you'd be surprised of kind of bonding relationships between a George Russell and a Charles Leclerc playing playing truck driving simulators, and you're thinking, wow, the most mundane of sounding things, and they're having an absolute blast. And you have a real good handful of 5 or 6 young drivers that all individually can be world beaters. I'm going to leave obviously all the kind of nitty gritty statistics off to Sam, but on the social level and what it does on a marketing approach, it's an absolute win for each one of those teams, because these are guys that are aging at an average, Lando Norris is 20, George Russell is 22, Pierre Gasly is 24. Albon's also 24, and so you've got a young bunch of dudes that are going to be extremely relatable. But playing game consoles, you can watch Lando Norris not only play Formula One simulators, he's playing Call of Duty Warzone, I think it's Charles Leclerc and Antoine Griezmann is meant to be doing like a joint live stream of Fortnite together as well. So we're talking about a lot of amazing crossover.
Yeah, yeah.
So we are getting a chance to see these drivers more than ever, and we're getting to see their personalities more than we ever would have thought than back in the day.
Yeah, and I think so. When we talk about young drivers, I think at the moment, there, as Matt said, so there, from my point of view, there is 5 or 6 young drivers on the grid. I think when we talk about young drivers, we talk about Lando Norris, Charles Leclerc, George Russell, Pierre Gasly, and Alex Albon. Right,
so he's left out our boy.
Listen, hold
Max,
on. Let me explain.
All right.
So Max, I 100% agree. He's young, right? He's a young guy. I'm not saying he's not young, but look how experienced he is. He first raced in Formula One when he was 16. He's been in Formula One for like almost 4 or 5 years. Like, he's 22. Yes, he's young, but I wouldn't class him as a young driver in terms of he's young to the sport because he's got young so much experience. He's got 102 races under his belt. And 8 of those have been wins. I don't think we can class him. He's won more than someone like Sergio Perez, and he's been on the grid for like
I think what it is that, to be fair to Max, I think that he's an experienced driver because obviously he's been in the top tier a lot longer than the others. But at the end of the day is that there's still that maturity, and because he's still 22, so yeah, he's still going to have the same, you know, the way that he handled the argument with Ocon.
And we have seen it.
You know,
we did. To be fair, we did see it at the start of the 2018 season. He was driving. He was driving like an immature racing driver. He wasn't doing anything illegal, but he was being a little bit. I don't want to say big headed because he's obviously incredibly talented, so he's not big headed. But he was taking gaps. He was doing almost reminiscent of a little bit of Senna. Like, if you don't go for the gap, you're not a racing driver anymore. And he was going for gaps that were admittedly a little bit too small. And I think now he's graduated to knowing that instead of seeing an opportunity and taking it because it's the first one that comes, he's biding his time more and he's taking the right opportunity. So obviously, I rewatched the 2018 Chinese Grand Prix on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And there's a move he makes on Vettel. And Max nowadays wouldn't do that move. I don't, because for those that didn't see it, it was a late braking maneuver. Seb couldn't get the front of the car round the corner, so Max went for it and they touched and they basically perfectly pirouetted at the same time. Now, a Max of 2019, 2020, I don't think we would see that because he's so much more mature than he was in 2018. But I think those little incidents have taught him a lot. And he's also now got he's number one driver of a team. You know, he had Danny Ric next to him, who is a proven race winner. And everyone calls him the honey badger because he is the best overtaker in the business. Now Max is leading that team. You know, the same as Charles Leclerc is almost leading Ferrari. Like, these are young kids. He outscored Vettel last year. He outqualified him, he outscored him. Like, and I think from a young driver perspective, what we're looking at is really exciting, mainly because these guys, so the 5 guys that I was talking about, Leclerc, Albon, Gasly, Norris, and Russell, these 5 guys have dominated junior series for the past 4 or 5 years, right? So in we're looking at wins, Lando Norris has absolutely smashed a lot of series in terms of title. He's raced in so many series, but he's taken the F3 championship, the Eurocar championship, the Formula Renault championship, and the Toyota Racing Series championship, right? He's 20.
Yeah.
20. And he's already got 5 titles under his belt. George Russell won F2 in 2018. He won GP3. He won Formula 4. Like, look at Charles Leclerc. He won F2. He won GP3. He debuted in 2018 for Sauber. He took that Sauber against Marcus Ericsson, who has raced in Formula 1 for quite a long time now, races in IndyCar, and he outscored him. He outscored him for the season. For someone who's never raced in a Formula One car, he's only tested for a couple of teams, he actually outpaced it. And you look at Pierre, I know Pierre is 24,
yeah,
but he's relatively new to the series. He only debuted in Formula One in 2018. He's won the GP2 series. He's won the Formula Renault series. Like, we're looking at exciting, prospering young talents, right? And when we look at the older grids, let's look at Charlotte. Like, Charles Leclerc is the youngest, one of the second youngest Ferrari driver they've ever signed, right? And none of that would be possible without Red Bull signing Max Verstappen. So on that respect, I agree that Max is a young driver, but I think now he can't be put in the same class as Charles, Alex, George, Pierre, and Lando because he has too much experience.
Where your argument is backed up is because obviously Pierre joined the top tier team at Red Bull. Pierre Gasly joined Max Verstappen, and it's weird. Like, in retrospect, obviously when you're watching it, especially on like Drive to Survive, you're looking at, you know, someone who's 2 years younger than him being like the main driver, yeah. You know, the father figure, effectively. Just when he finally got a good result and got his podium, when he moved back down to Toro Rosso, then the first person to come over to him and congratulate him after he won was Max Verstappen. So I definitely think that there's an edge to him because of his experience. But I think that immaturity may come it out when it's coming to the end of the contracts. Like, is he going to be patient? Because obviously he's still young. Is he going to be patient to stay with the team? Is he going to, you know, start getting antsy and move? You know, those types of things. Because obviously we all know when you move, that's a risky business. That could set you back here. You know?
But my question as well is, like, compared to Alex Albon, of course, there's a lot of intertwining stories between them both being Toro Rosso, and basically swapping seats. Alex ended up taking the Red Bull seat off Pierre Gasly and so forth, which you can also see in Series 2 of Drive to Survive.
Last plug.
Very good plug, yes, for our good friends of Formula 1. But, I mean, so who is a double-edged question for Sam, but between Pierre Gasly and Alex Albon, who carried more success going into Formula 1? And then also, it's like asking the politicians like questions about coronavirus. I'm asking Sam double questions.
I'm on a daily briefing.
And also, is
follow-up question:
do you think, because you are, you know, all F1's resident stat man, you know, so who do you think has carried over more potential, and who maybe has came into F1 kind of being slightly disappointing? Loaded more question
weight, more weight of versus. So I think the Alex Albon and the Pierre Gasly question comes down to consistency. So we know Pierre is an incredible driver, but it comes in sparks and flashes. We saw him, he has often been in the right place at the right time, like Brazil, and he has had some incredible races for Toro Rosso, but he was given a seat at Red Bull and he wasn't consistent enough. And I don't know whether that's pressure. It probably is pressure, because that's a big... You've got Helmut Marko breathing down your neck, and he's a scary... But in terms of pure consistency, I think Alex comes out on top. Now, I'm not going to say that Alex is a better driver than Pierre, because Pierre, on stats on paper, has got more podiums. Simple answer. But at the same time, I think Alex has got potential to push. I still think Pierre is the potential to push. I just think he went up a bit too early. But yeah, I think in terms of who brought more weight into the series, I feel like Alex has more of a fighting passion than Pierre does, because Alex fought his way. You know, he lost a drive after the Formula 2 series last year. He didn't have a drive. He was third behind Lando and George. And then he went to Thailand, which you can see in Drive to Survive, actually. He went to Thailand to get sponsors. And then all of a sudden, he was given a drive at Toro Rosso. And that, all he has done is prove, and all he's been doing is trying to prove himself. So I think Albon's got the passion, the drive, and the consistency to do well. I think Pierre needs another year, maybe at Toro Rosso. I think him this year would work.
I would just say this. You know, just judging from the second half of the year, because I hold my hands up being guilty. I've been looking at Pierre and just being like, you know, obviously, you remember when it was at Silverstone, me just saying, yeah, he hasn't got it. There's something, he hasn't got it. Like that next level thing. However, after we met him, you know, after he moved, then he seemed a lot more, if anything, being honest, relieved and chilled and a lot more like relaxed about being back at Toro Rosso. And on top of that, he's got a new grit in between his teeth because he wants to show everyone, especially, his former team, like what he's capable of. And we saw a new driver coming back after he moved back for the second half of the season. So I would put him up there.
That's why I think an extra year at AlphaTauri is going to give him that boost that he needs. And I think once he's got that season. I don't know at this point.
Because honestly, it's just a tricky question, but could there be a time where AlphaToro now could actually, they're not going to contend for a championship, but like, be in the mix of the big boys?
They've always been a pretty decent midfield team. They've always been pretty consistent. I don't think, when you look at Racing Point this year, look how quick they were on the testing timesheets. Like, they were mad fast. And then you got McLaren. I think they're going to be competing with Renault and Alfa Romeo. They may do. But with someone like Pierre in their grasps, I think they've got a better chance of doing that than...
He's proven. You mean, you look at his podium at the Brazil Grand Prix last year, it's like, despite what all he went through, and like, I think Dre's touched on it, the grit and the relief was like a perfect... I mean, there was a lot of chaos in that Brazilian Grand Prix, but... You still have to have a mindset. You still have Lewis Hamilton breathing down your neck. So there is a top class driver, and I think that's an easy thing to put down. I think if you get caught up in the drama of like a Drive to Survive, like these aren't like complete fools that are taking these cars and coming through, and they're just like some dude have picked up a go kart track. These are people that are legitimate drivers and have come through a long process. You think of how many cars can fill that grid on a Sunday afternoon. Yeah. It's like. It's a hard line to get past.
I think that's where the pressure comes into it. Like, so as you said, Pierre felt seemed more relieved at Toro Rosso. I feel like that was always going to be the case because he's back where he's comfortable. He knows.
Yeah, but the only thing is, what I would say to that is that he could have, which I was worried about, really gone back into his shell. Like, that could have destroyed him. Like, he might have been out altogether. Because we've seen it happen many a time with other people, and for him to come back and like, the first race he was on everyone's ass. The second race after that, then you're seeing a new aggressive approach. So I'm always rooting for him because meeting him, he's a nice guy, and he's got something in him. Plus as well, something weird, which was that he listened to Candy Shop before he. Honestly, we'll try to get these interviews back up so you guys can see past interviews from last season, so you can see my face and reaction to that.
To answer the rest of your loaded question, Matthew.
Yes.
I think someone that's brought the most potential to the sport, I'm going to have to go with Charles, if I'm honest, but just purely based off his debut season with Sauber. He bossed it, mate. That's all I can say.
That's what's really interesting about Charles. Like, so I've been lucky to spend time with various F1 drivers, and going back to when Kimi was still there, and obviously seeing Seb there, and working on those those races, you know, no doubt that he's. The caliber of those drivers on the track is second to none. But I think what I always find very revealing is when you work with sporting athletes, is what are they like away from the track, and what are they like as people? I've been so lucky to be around across many different sports with many of what you could consider great athletes. And not to do a name drop thing, but this is more to kind of put praise on Charles. It's like I've been around players like. A Neymar when he joined PSG. I've been around Lewis Hamilton's. I've been around training camps of Anthony Joshua when he's been training. I've been around many elite like footballers. And I think especially, and I can only really draw a big comparison of this to what I've seen of young footballers, is Charles's focus and confidence and composure doing media and being dragged around and doing this show activation, doing this mission minute activation, and all the crazy stuff that you don't get to see off the track unless you are within that media bubble. It's like their week pretty much starts come Wednesday if they're around the tracks, because then the media starts that Wednesday and even Thursday. And I always remember before the Shanghai Grand Prix, was it last year or the year before? But basically, Charles' first year in Formula One with Ferrari, we worked with him doing a major ridiculous random thing ever, which is putting him on an ice rink, racing a Chinese Olympian figure skater. And he was in a go-kart with spikes that which were ripping the crap out of the ice rink. You could barely test the go-kart for safety because the spikes for grip were ripping it to shreds like a wet football pitch on Hackney Downs. But the one thing I always took away from Charles was he was so calm and so comfortable with whatever the randomness is. And with footballers, you might ask them to do some really rubbish challenge that some brand has come up and you just got to roll with it. And, you'll get this kind of weird kind of swagger and they're kind of like, they pretend they don't want to do it and they can't stop wanting to do it. With Charles, he was what I can only put as like a complete pure young professional that feels like he's been doing this Formula One game for like 10 years. He walked in and was so personable, even when you have to explain and break it down to him. He was, inquisitive enough to want to understand what would go into this ridiculous challenge of racing a figure skater. But also, I just think like that is what a team like Ferrari probably needs in this time of where they are so desperate for success and they struggle to have top success. It's all down when it comes to a prime athlete is mindset. And I think Charles Leclerc, for me, was one of those drivers where with just pure charm and calm, for me, felt like a driver that is completely ready for this massive ride, whether it's with Formula One, whether it's with Ferrari, and whatever he does going forward with Formula One.
I 100% agree with everything you said, Matt. Actually, I think the crowning glory for Charles as a person was his 2017 win in Baku when he was racing in Formula 2. His dad died 4 days before the race and he went on and won it. And I mean, if you look at Charles's history, it's not the prettiest,
And then Spa, you look at Spa as well.
Yeah. Then he lost Jules Bianchi in 2014, who was his godfather. Then he lost his father in 2017, 4 days before his maiden win, his feature race win in Baku. And then he lost Antoine Hubert, who was one of his best friends, along with Pierre Gasly, his best friend, just before the race. And on that Sunday, it was his first win in Formula One. I mean, obviously, the whole situation took over and muted the entire thing. But this is a guy that can take that massive sorrow and that issue and just compartmentalize it just for a Sunday. Mm-hmm. I'm sure after the race, he would, he had a cry in the dressing room. But he can compartmentalize that entire struggle, put it in a box, put it on the shelf, go out, race and win, and then come back and deal with it all later. Like, as a person, he's the perfect racing driver. You can put him in a car and the only thing he's going to focus on that moment is that race. Nothing will
basically, we love you, Charles. That's what we're all trying
to say. I can see the comments coming in. Thank
you. Exactly. But this is so important. But this is so interesting because I think this is one thing that you would look at all the young drivers. They've all come from different backgrounds. And above all, whether it's some of them have come from money or some of them have just, had parents that have really put a lot of support behind them. But I feel like Charles is obviously like a person that obviously has been powered by a lot of tragedy. And I think that makes a lot of amazing, incredible athletes.
Yeah. And I think actually another one, I know George Russell hasn't gone through any hardships like Charles. He may have done. I don't know his life story at all. But this is a guy that has raced in Formula 2. He's won the championship. He was a test driver for Mercedes. He was a reserve driver for Mercedes. And then he went to race for Williams last year. All right. And that could be a season that would ruin your confidence, ruin your passion for the sport, because he was racing 19th and 20th every race. Yet every single race, he still went out. And every qualifying session, he still went out and out-qualified Kubica every season, every race. And I think your question about who's the most disappointing, I don't think there is a driver for me that disappoints in any particular way. I feel like George Russell's debut season was disappointing, not because of him, but because of his car. And I actually think George Russell absolutely. is a massively underrated talent at the moment. I think there's people that watch Formula One like us who know it. We know he's good, and we know it's just his car that's not great. There's a couple of people that I'm sure that are watching it, and all they're going to see is like names on the screen, and they're like, oh, he's last every race.
He's got the numbers, great. Yeah.
But actually, he's an incredible driver. Like, he's 22. He's already won Formula 3, GP3. He's already won Formula 2. He's won Formula 4. Like, he's got a lot on his plate. And if you look at people that have won Formula 2, it's like Nico Rosberg, Lewis Hamilton. They're champions that are coming through and winning that series. So, you know, we've got a pretty good lineup with five of those young drivers.
So on one, just like from a newbie's point of view, I've always had this like kind of thing in my head. I was just thinking, okay, right. So regardless of the car, let's say for example all the cars were together. Like let's say just focus on the young guys as we are at the moment. You know, who would stand out? Do you think if all the cars were actually the same? Because I think obviously George Russell's getting a bit of a bad rap to new fans, I'd say, because they think, oh, you know, he's driving a shit car. You know, he's always last. You know, so he's not getting the love that the others get. So who would do you think that you would stand out if all the cars were the same?
I think Lando would be one we'd see stand out, because if you watch some of the 2018 F2 series with Lando and George, right? Mm-hmm. Some of their battles, man, it was insane. Like,
really?
they would go for three or four corners just doing like this constantly. Overtaken. And like Lando coming with some amazing racecraft, and he can defend really well. Mm. And we saw it in, I can't remember where it was, it may have been France, where his DRS went. So I think it was the DRS went, and he had to keep Danny Ric behind him. And that's where the famous radio message was like, forever?
forever?
Like, forever? I think like he can defend really well. And yeah. I think what we always say is, as an F1 driver, you've got to be fast. Yeah, it's very true. And you've got to be able to overtake. That's very true. But you've also got to be incredibly defensive and know how to drive a car. Like, you need to know how to make that car as wide as possible for a turn to stop anyone getting past you. And I think that's something that Lando's got. And I think George is quick, man. George is quick. There's no, to put it bluntly, Mercedes don't sign slow drivers.
So for me, like, obviously I don't want to get everyone knows I'm a Charles Leclerc fan, so I'm going to put that aside for a minute. So I can't wear Ferrari tops anymore, because it just looks too obvious. I don't want everyone to know. But I think that obviously Alex Albon is weird. It's because he's got some of the nicer guys. So you've got obviously Lando, and you've got Alex, who are the nicer ones out of the two, out of all of the guys, I would say. They to me, get overlooked when it comes. They're like, oh, they're nice guys, but they're not like looked upon as a threat. And I think, you know, Alex would have had his first podium, you know, if it not been for Lewis unnecessarily hitting him. Heaven knows why.
Shade.
I'll leave that one alone. I'll let you guys reading between the lines on that one. But yeah, it'd just be interesting to see, like, you know, when we've got these double headers and things like that, it'll be interesting to see who has got the mental stamina and because obviously these guys have been like competing all the time, you know, yeah, against each other in the public. So obviously if Charles Leclerc is racing on the Grand Prix, then people are going to be expecting him to be up there, you know.
Yeah.
So you still have that mental pressure because the audience is there, where all the other, obviously the older drivers, you know, you don't see them at all.
No.
So it might stand them in better stead, actually.
Yeah, and I think actually as Matt said at the start, right, Formula One is moving. It's a behemoth of a beast. It's a massive sport that travels the world, but it's moving in terms of its perception, and people are like, younger people start to follow it now because of the social media attitude behind it, you know, the way people are able to engage with the sport. And what we've seen, and I think it's come to a head now because of the coronavirus pandemic, is that we have this split of the drivers that are literally owning the off season and then the drivers that have kind of just faded away. So like Lando, Max, No, not so much Max, sorry. Lando, Charles, George, and to be fair, Max, he has been doing some sim racing. But they have, like, they've all owned the off-season. Mm-hmm. So, like, Lando, we've always said, is the king of sim racing. He's the king of the off-season at the moment because of all his Twitch stream. I saw him, he was on the phone to Captain Tom Moore today, inviting him down to McLaren. Like, yes, it's a little bit of PR for McLaren, but... They have literally owned the season in terms of their social media presence, their sim racing. All of the journalists want to talk to them because they're the next generation of drivers. And I think they are really proving a point that, yeah, they're rookies, all right? And, okay, they're not challenging for first position, Charles, but they're not all challenging for first position just yet. But give them a year. Give us a year and we'll come back fighting. And you've got the old breed like Lewis and Seb that are a bit like, oh shit. Do you know what I mean? They're nervous. Like, Seb's losing to Charles. Lewis is losing to Charles.
I think the others, the older ones definitely come across as they're taking it more seriously, and so they're equals kind of nervous or looking over their shoulders because obviously, you know, I know obviously there's other racers that wanna still be down and be seen as cool. But I think that there's from interest, because obviously the media are interviewing a lot of the younger drivers now. They're not even talking to the older ones as much because they're not going to get as much. There's not that much interest because you're not going to get anything new from them. And I think that the, you know, salute to the young guys keeping it going. Salute to McLaren's Instagram and social media. They've been keeping up, you know, keeping us very, very, very much entertained. That's Helen. Salute to you in particular from you know, any free passes is more than welcome.
At any point, I'm free and available.
I need a hot lap.
Fingers crossed we'll be able to show our lovely followers, supporters, I'll say, you know, who screams the most in a hot lap. So I will stop being mocked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a tenner on it, but I'm definitely going to win.
Yeah. I'm going to be sitting there just eating a sandwich, chilling, just listening to my meat. That's how I'm going to be in a hot lap. I'm going to be loving it.
That's what we should actually do. Now you said that, we should actually see who can eat the hot
lap. More than happy. There's a lot of challenges we've got to do. There's a couple of challenges. Once season gets rolling, you will get to see the old F1 team throwing down, not just sitting and chatting about just, let's talk about cars. You're going to see us do some cool stuff, hopefully. You're going to hopefully see us doing hot laps. You might see us get on a go-kart track and race each other. It's going to be a few things.
Really, one of the things that I think it's actually probably make a really good feature is Matt learning to drive.
I don't drive, guys. Yeah, how about that?
Oh, Lord.
I really want to see Matt learn to drive. And we should make him learn to drive in a McLaren.
I'm more than happy.
Imagine that. Can you imagine that? Like, that's his driving lessons. You've got an L plate on a McLaren.
Well, actually, talking about this though, some of these young drivers we've been talking about, they were racing at 200 miles an hour before they could legally drive on the road.
It's true. Lando is a good example.
That is very strange.
Lando was racing cars before he was legally able to drive, which is incredible. And I'm just saying, like, I've raced a lot of drivers in go-kart tracks and have left the go-kart track with the fastest lap, but I'm a non-driver, so I don't know. I'm just, you know, just a guy with a green license. So
listen,
I don't know.
Matt, if you knock everyone off the track by crashing into them, that doesn't mean you're a great driver. It just means you're the only one that gets past the finish line.
If I can't see you on the yellow flags, is it my fault I was still being really fast? This is why
there's now a black and white flag in Formula One, because people like you.
Just lastly, let's before we talk about Matt's game that I'm quite interested in discussing, let's talk about another game. Obviously, the big one from over the weekend, the E Grand Prix in China. Charles won again. Was you guys entertained? Actually, it was quite a interesting race as well.
It was more competitive, and I think that was what was enjoyable. I mean, we had some, you know, fresh faces. Like Carlos Sainz joined the party and then sent it straight into the barriers, straight off the go, which was
straight into the wall.
Amazing. Lando Norris somehow still, after all the streaming he does, when it comes to Sunday and he's asked to do these Formula One Sky Sports races, that his computer always crashes. So that is
three times. Three times.
Do you know what it is? I reckon his mum picked up the phone and turned the broadband off.
Completely. Exactly.
That's what it is.
No, not again, son.
I'm counting.
It's now family time. It's Sunday. It's a holy day.
It's dinner time. Sit and eat your dinner. You're not playing the games until you finish your dinner.
Can't get out from the table until you finish what's on your plate.
Can you imagine?
He just like dashes a glass of milk in her face and tells her to shut up again. The e-gaming crew are back.
Shut your mouth, Mum. I've got games to win.
I can see these t-shirts being made.
We should just have a spilt glass of shit. I don't know. We don't want to tell anyone to shut their mouths here at OF1. But
don't cry over spilt milk, Mum.
Exactly. We had a more competitive race. Alex Albon managed to mid-race undercut Charles when he was in the pits, and that made it exciting. And then Charles did an unbelievable bit of driving to get back in front. We had a few, new faces. Kieran Mobley from Lazio, Italian striker, add to another list of sportsmen that can't really drive cars very well when it comes to eSims. So thank you for joining.
But he came second. He came last, didn't he?
Nah, that was important.
Bottom three or four.
Again?
Oh, yeah, swing and a miss. But more competitive, I thought.
I did quite appreciate Ian Poulter commentating on his own overtake, though. That was quite funny.
Did you see that?
He's like, did you see that? I just got always come back at you, though. It was all right. I think Matt's right. It was a really competitive race. The Carlos Sainz, like, from the shot you got as they were coming down out of turn three and then straight into the wall, I was like, Carlos Sainz is up.
That's the end of that one. he's probably just said, look, I'll race, and he's probably like, look, I can't be bothered to do this.
To be fair, he's probably racing on the Xbox controller while they're all on Sims.
That is true. That is true. I think we've got to definitely do that. So before we go now, Matt, tell us about this your game.
Well, exactly. We need to keep the entertainment variety, kind of flowing and happening, because without races it's just us talking about cars and stuff, and we're just watching loads of e-races. So I'm going to pause for effect and welcome everybody to the first ever mini quiz of alternative F1. Now I am going to give Dre and Sam, our two contestants, like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style, the chance to win absolutely nothing but only pride if you can tell me, out of our highlighted races that we spoke about today on this Young Drivers edition of the Alt F1 podcast. There is no structure to this quiz, but I'm going to play a very simple, traditional format of higher or lower. Okay. So you have to give me, we're going to make these questions on the fly, but I'm going to throw out to you guys is who, out of Max Verstappen, Alex Albon, Charles Leclerc, Lando Norris, and Pierre Gasly, has the most followers on Instagram?
Ooh. Oh, that's a good question. That's a very, very good question.
Hold on. Are we writing down our answer?
I want to say write it down if you have a tablet device or phone or a old school pen and paper, then you can absolutely write this down, because I will have a follow-up question. Now, we're going to go for the highest and the lowest, and then we're going to mess with a mid-card later on. So, give me who out of, again, Max Verstappen. And anyone at home can play this quiz. If you've got a pen or paper or an iPhone, you have 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Too late. You now are left behind. And you've got Max Verstappen, Alex Albon, Charles Leclerc, George Russell, Lando Norris, or Pierre Gasly. Who has the most followers and who has the least?
Who's going first?
Wait a minute. I've just changed my mind. Give me 2 seconds.
Come on, Trey.
No, I'm gonna go with my gut. There we go. Right, there we go. So I'm just gonna show you what I've typed.
Final answer. That's what I'm saying.
It's the final answer. Can you see it?
No, I can't.
Lando.
Is that number one?
That's Lando, yeah.
Lando at the top. Sam, who have you got at the top?
I've got Lando at the top.
Lando at the top. Okay, so who do you have as your lowest? Who has the lowest amount of followers?
You say George Russell's in this, right?
Yeah,
George is in this. Yeah,
he's definitely the lowest.
My lowest is Alex Albon.
Okay. Ooh. Are you ready for this? This quiz has been gripping, very gripping in the last 2 minutes, and it's birth. So, so have you both said Lando? Is that, am I right in saying?
Yeah, but I was going to go for Charles, but I was
going to say that Lando.
No, it's either Lando or Max.
Is out of the famous six, Lando is third place.
Third. Must be Max.
You got to remember,
Max is my backup number one.
This little island, the United Kingdom, isn't a very popular island after we, you know, alienated the rest of Europe post-Brexit. So, British might not be the flavour of the month, but
I will rate all year.
It's not been everyone's year, to be fair. But, yeah, so Lando is actually third place in that. So, you know, he gets on the podium, but not quite. I will give you guys an opportunity to realise that the lowest, what were your answers for lowest?
Alex Albon.
Andre, mine
was George Russell.
So, if you were to say Alex Albon, Sam, you would be incorrect. He is not the lowest. And it is, in fact, there is a point going in the way of Andre Dixon. Yes, it is. It's George Russell. George Russell has got 543,000 followers as of this episode. And Alex Albon has 546,000.
Oh! Okay, no, that close.
So yes, Pierre Gasly has 766,000 followers. Now, Lando Norris has 1.4, leaving it between Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc.
Leclerc.
So I will give you guys redemption.
Second chance. Who has the most followers?
Leclerc is cool.
Verstappen, we've got the orange army. Verstappen models for G-Star Raw, mate. Let's be honest.
I like that split. Now, I wish G-Star, I could have prepared this quiz much better, because what I could have done was done a nice big reveal with the driver's face in the background. So let me see, with pressure building, drum roll please, as I try and change this background. So Andre has said Charles Leclerc. And the Orange Army is with the man in green. So if I can find an image I have saved on my computer.
I'm going to be the stats man. Oh, sweet lord.
Don't be Charles.
Here we go. Well, I'm saying here we go, but I can't find an image I just saved. So bear with me.
I'm sorry about this, people that are listening on the podcast.
It's not quite. It's not quite so exciting.
We need some hold music.
It will get better.
Well, I've just realised I can't find an image, and two, this isn't going to be a great experience. Four, this isn't going to be a great experience.
Forget about our poor listeners.
So, post-edit. We're going to edit that section out. What? This is live. Oh, well, who cares? It's actually, with the most followers, at 3 million, and by a hair's length, second place is 2.9. So, we just got 100,000, kind of, on Instagram numbers in between. Second place, Charles Leclerc.
What?
Max Verstappen.
No way.
And that is why.
Thank you.
He's been buying followers.
My dad.
There's no way.
There you go. And that is a very shining example of why I cut my career very quickly when I was working in entertainment television, because it is a lot of hassle trying to make a quiz on the fly. Jesus. Well done, that. So it's very good. We it was competitive, like this at E-Race.
We've got to do this permanent thing now. We'll have
new quizzes, and I'll try and make quizzes around our topics. If not, we're just gonna have a really random ad hoc quiz. But
yeah.
I think
Matt, I'll tell you what, that quiz was certified by Sam. Not gonna lie.
Thank you very much.
I missed that.
This episode.
Big green tick.
Boom.
All right, drop. I'm out,
guys. Thank you so much for again listening to us, and we hope that we've actually given you something else to think about this week, except for the horrible misery.
Realize that your Instagram numbers are nowhere near as good as you think.
Exactly, and I'm still shocked, and I will double check and see if Max has been buying followers to overtake Charles Leclerc. Because it
doesn't need it, does
it? Any form of sense, does it? Thank again the NHS workers, who are keeping us, everyone safe and well. Please, every Thursday, take the time out to go and applaud them, and stay home, and please keep on washing your hands. Keep on looking out for us on our alt sport platform, and obviously alternative F1. So there's a lot of things to be able to go through. But just look for us on all of our handles, as we'll put them below before I mess them up anymore. You guys, appreciate you. Please stay safe and keep up with the cooking and the driving lessons and Igor and Pri watching. And I'm struggling for things that we have to do this week, except for me running around after children.
Back to baking and back to going to our games consoles. Do 5 kilometers of running and sit at home and do nothing.
You know what? I'm gonna follow Matt's example. Actually, go and do a run this week, and I will.
Very good.
I'm not.
I'm gonna put a picture up on our socials.
If you nominate me, Dre, for the 5K, that's it. We're done.
I'm gonna nominate you. I'm gonna literally walk down the street and then just pour some water over my face and just be like,
I want a full Strava report, mate. I want to see the lap you've done.
Yeah, we want it recorded on Strava so we get the stats and we can analyse that on the next episode.
So I can embarrass myself and so just how long it took me to do it.
100%.
For that shirt? Absolutely.
Guys, much love. Thank you so much for listening.
See you next time.
You take care of yourself. Peace.